Welcome to the Leadership Podcast, brought to you by LifeWest, the chiropractic college. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Oberstein.
And I'm your host, Dr. Mary Oberstein.
And we're excited to have you join us as we bring special guests in the world of health, leadership, business success, and chiropractic. Our mission is to create a brighter future for humanity, and we are thrilled to walk this journey with you.
Enjoy this episode, and thank you for being with us today.
Well, hello, everybody. Dr. Ron Oberstein, president of Life Chiropractic College West, and welcome to another edition of our Life West Leadership Line. Today, I've got a wonderful guest on the show today. Known him for many years, and he's just a phenomenal chiropractor. I've got Justin Ohm, Dr. Justin Ohm. Hey, Justin, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. I'm out here in rainy Pennsylvania, and it seems like it's been raining for the past month. So hopefully that brings the May flowers part of it, part of that equation soon. But thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'll see if it's true, right? April showers, you know, I think showers anytime. A little bit about Justin. Dr. Justin graduated from Palmer, Florida, man. He wanted to get to the beach from, where'd you go from? Did you go from Pennsylvania?
Yeah, so I was north of Philadelphia, about an hour, just in kind of Amish country. That's where I was in undergraduate. I met my wife there, so it wasn't all bad. And then we moved down to Port Orange.
Yeah. So went to Florida, graduated in 2006, and went back up to Pennsylvania, and actually has two practices now. Practices in South Philly, and also practices in Media, Pennsylvania, where his mom, Jeannie, and father, Tom, is your dad still practicing?
Yeah. I practice alongside my dad on Mondays and Wednesdays. I just do a half day now. I've got other things I'm focusing on as well. We'll get into that, I'm sure. And then the South Philadelphia office, I've really kind of pulled back as well since getting an associate. Who'd have thunk it, you know, a couple years ago. So that's been an absolute godsend.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing is you've got a beautiful family, you know, your wife and your kids, and you know, and Justin was obviously raised by chiropractors. He's a chiropractic, he's a chiro kid, you know, and I could say it every time I see you, I certainly miss your mom, you know, when she transitioned. And I know that you and your dad are carrying the tradition and doing all the things that you're doing. But the other thing about Dr. Justin is that he is the executive director of the ICPA. So took it over. His mom, Dr. Jeannie Ohm, was the executive director at the time. And then when she transitioned, Justin stepped into that position, and he's just been doing great stuff, which we'll get into. But Justin, it's great. I had you on the show maybe 2-3 years ago. I don't know, but it's just great to see you. Anytime I see you, and I know you're coming out to the Wave in August, and you'll be speaking at the Wave in August. So we're thrilled to have you and ICPA here. I believe ICPA is going to be a sponsor at some level.
That's right.
So thank you, ICPA, very much. You know, I like to start the conversation, you know, before your mom passed, we were in heavy discussions, you know, and your mom and I sat on boards together and heavy discussions all around salutogenesis. In fact, this was something that your mom was so passionate about, you know, and I know that you've carried it forward, your dad's carried it forward, but, you know, pathogenesis and salutogenesis. You know, and I'd really like to talk about that, because I think that whether we use the words or not, there's still actions behind those words. You know, we can just define it if we want to. It'll take about 30 seconds. But, you know, just tell me how you're seeing the vision of salutogenesis playing out, even pathogenesis. And once again, I want to tell our audience, there's no right and wrong. It's not like, you know, one is bad, one is good. You know, it's all good, you know, depending on what you're doing in your practice and how you're working, but it's also how we look at health, right? So share with us kind of a vision of where you see that and how you work with it and how the ICPA, if that's even a proper statement working with it, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I what I think is really powerful about the term salutogenesis is it doesn't exclude any style of practice or profession or practitioner, right? You can, it's more of a vantage point. Like which direction are you looking when you do your XYZ, right? So if you're looking at, like, you can have a salutogenic surgeon, right? You can have a pathogenic subluxation-based chiropractor, it's the direction that you're kind of facing when you approach that care. And so, but I think it resonates with chiropractic and with so many chiropractors, because there's that undercurrent of trusting the body in chiropractic. And so giving the body that respect and focusing on how do we better support the body, in that endeavor of adaptation. That's a salutogenic perspective. And that's why I think it just resonates so heavily. And I remember when his salutogenesis was coined back in the 70s. Yeah. Aaron Antonovsky wrote a book, I think it was Health, Stress, and Coping. And I actually ordered an original copy of this book for far too much money, you know, on eBay. But I just wanted this, you know, faded, you know, kind of 70s cover and everything. The musty smell. Yeah, it's underlined. You're like, why'd they have to write in this book with pen? But someone who obviously was, you know, using it for some study of, you know, in college. But so it's not a new term per se. But I do remember, chiropractors found this term, and that was in large part by, you know, as a result of Chris Kent, and he wrote a paper on it. I believe that was my mom's kind of foray into this terminology. And I just remember her being ecstatic, like literally reading this paper, and she was in this office right where I'm sitting, and, you know, ran out of the, oh my gosh, this is it, you know, and Tom's on the tractor cutting the grass, stop turning off it. It's salutogenic, you know, kind of, it all clicked. And that really became kind of a pivot point for the ICPA to say, no, we have to be, instead of directing our research in the direction of, symptom abatement and a pathogen, and all, so much of research, almost all of research, is really a pathogenic endeavor.
Yeah.
You know, what's the problem? Does this therapy or modality reduce that problem, you know, so to speak? Or maybe if we're really progressive and, you know, wellness minded, can it prevent that problem, right? Preventative care, wellness-based care is all with, prevention in mind. And what are you trying to prevent? Well, you're trying to prevent the problem, you know, still. So you're focused on that problem still.
Absolutely. So, for just our viewers, you know, salute means health, obviously, right? You know, the French coined that with salute, you know? And Genesis is the birth of, you know, or the creation of. And so when you look through a salutogenic lens, right, you're talking about the creation of health. The it doesn't mean a symptom doesn't belong in there at all. It just means that the focus is moving toward a healthy model, right, as compared to pathogenic, which is more, you know, the creation of disease. And once again, they're not right and wrong. You know, they're really, right. They really are not. You know, someone has cancer and they go see a cancer specialist, that person might be in a pathogenic, you know, model. And that's okay. I mean, or they need to, you know, get something done in an emergency care, right? It might be that, but still the lens I like to look at it, not just in healthcare, but in life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah.
I think that's really the important thing, is there's a time and a place for, you know, pathogenic based care. One is not good, one is not bad, just like you're saying. The difference is, and especially for the ICPA, where so many of our members are gravitating towards a style of practice that is a family wellness practice. You know, where you're seeing the benefit of caring for families in an asymptomatic presentation. They're coming in and, you know, not because you're forcing them. I always say that to new patients. Yeah. You know, people don't come back because I, you know, tell them they have to. I don't tell them they have to. You know, people come back because they want to.
Yeah.
People come back because they feel, you know, what this is offering, and they don't quite know how to explain it. They don't know what it is, but it's something and it's important and they want to come back to it. And hopefully that's not motivated by fear or anxiety of, and I mentioned it earlier, even if we are kind of, talking the, you know, subluxation based terminology in practice, which I largely don't, because it's a new term, you know, for them to, and I really kind of talk more in terms of adaptability. But even if we are talking in that subluxation based term, are we finding and fixing subluxations? What if we don't do this? Is this going to be detrimental to my child's health if I don't have their subluxations fixed or corrected? And I never gravitated towards that That's that tableside talk, because that puts it, that puts me in a place of authority saying, oh, I'm an expert and I found these things. You better take care of them. No, no, no. Your child will do magnificently well because of innate intelligence, even if you don't get adjusted. I just think that we can support this process a little bit better if you do get adjusted. And when they agree to care, even not signing on the line, but when they understand that care is under that context and they pursue care in that context, you're talking about someone who's doing it for, you know, a very different reason than they're motivated by preventing ear infections or, oh my gosh, they've had three in a row. And I, you see what I'm saying? So it's kind of, it's a shift for them.
They're also empowered. And I think what, you know, the whole purpose of being a healthcare provider is to empower people to heal. And I'm not talking about, a pediatric heart surgeon, you know, someone who's got an emergency, but I'm talking about in chiropractic, to empower them, to give them back, you know, what's been taken away. Because let's look at this, because it's really a sociological deal. It really is. I mean, you know, we can get psychologists to look at this on a sociological level. You go back to the 70s and, you know, the 60s and 70s, the doctors with the white coats and, you know, the godly image, and you never question them, and you do exactly
cultural authority,
cultural authority, all this stuff, right? And you know, you go now, you know, 2024, and it's really, people are looking for partnerships. I mean, sadly, their doctors, their first doctor is Dr. Google, you know, and I say that sadly because they get all this information that just screws them up, and they get, you know, sometimes it could be great, but there's nothing to empower them, to allow them to know that, you know, they have the power to heal, that they have the power to regenerate, that, you know, it just not was it because before it was all about control and manipulation, right? You know, it's
yeah.
And so,
yeah, and I think they're absolutely looking for that difference.
They are.
They're, you know, they're often frustrated and just, oh my gosh, is this really like, okay, I guess my kid needs another medication, or are you sure they need to have these tubes, or, you know, whatever it is, even the birth process, how medicalized and managed, you know, that whole process is. And they're like, this doesn't feel right. And so when they come in and they see a chiropractor who has a salutogenic approach to practice, it's like, whoa, it's like the, you know, you're taking the red pill. You know what I mean? You're kind of waking up in the, oh my gosh, there's this instead of that kind of thing. And I think there's such a future for it. Like, you see it all the time, the biohacking movement right now, where people are taking cold showers and they're, you know, staring at the sun first thing in the morning. And that, you know what I mean? All this stuff that's like, you're not doing that to treat a symptom.
Yeah.
You're not doing that to make something, you know, to fix something that's going wrong. You're doing that to amplify your body's adaptability and resiliency. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is chiropractic. This is salutogenic chiropractic. This is the talk that we've been talking, and people are doing cold plunges and all this stuff, and they don't understand. They are so ready for a salutogenic chiropractor to come into their life. You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's harmonizing, you know?
Absolutely.
And so that's what I think. There's a place for it.
Absolutely. And any practice, you can have a practice that where you're salutogenic, and you can, and in that same model, you get people coming who've got low back pain, and they're just, or they're concerned about their symptomatic care, and they're not ready to go across that bridge on this, you know, the creation of health bridge. And that's okay. You know, we meet them where they're at, right? And be able to just work with them. But I love what you said at the beginning, because, you know, when we have a model or a lens to look through, that's the key. Because so many chiropractors get, and other healthcare professions also get bogged down into the salutogenic, into the pathogenic model, you know, and they're just talking symptoms. You know what it's like. You've been there. You know, it's like, your end of the day, you're beat up, you know, instead of like your mom when she read that article, you know, and she ran out, you know. It's like, when you play with life all day, it's like incredible. I do want to tell you this, because, you know, one of the things that our research department here has done is that, you know, we only research we do, the in-house research we do, is on biomarkers. So amplifying the physiology, you know, can chiropractic care increase the immune system? Can chiropractic care improve, you know, and we have to have biomarkers to show it. So no subjective stuff, no pain, no this or no that, you know, and it's, And it's really cool when you start seeing the results and seeing, once again, the lens that it goes through. It's great. Let's switch topics, because I think a big thing right now, and I love it also, it's a new term, so to speak, maybe in the last 5-10 years, you know, happening in chiropractic, is the polyvagal, right?
Mm.
And it's cool. I mean, it is very cool. So, we had one of your instructors, you know, we had Dr. Rubin out here, and he's just that man is just an awesome guy. I don't know why. I feel like I've known him all my life, for many lifetimes, you know, just connect with him. He did a beautiful talk at the WAVE last year about the polyvagal. I know he works at the Polyvagal Institute. He's doing all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
How are you seeing that fitting into the model of healthcare and pediatrics and pregnancy and everything else?
Well, from a very, ground level, practitioner level, I remember when I came into practice, and my mom was like, oh, thank God. You take all the pregnant moms, take all the families, you get the dads, I'll just keep the babies. Huh. And I said, that's fine by me, because I don't know what, they make me nervous. I didn't have my own kids yet. You know, shortly after that I did, and my perspective kind of slowly changed. But I didn't really appreciate her decision. Like, no, I want the babies, just the newborns. And then when they're, you can take them when they're a little bit older. But from the practitioner level, when you're working with a baby, right, and you're looking that baby in the eye, and polyvagal is very, there's the pathways that kind of, connect one human to another. We're very unique in the mammal world in that respect, that we're kind of like able to interpret facial expressions in a split second. I remember reading the book Blink back in the day, how you can kind of like determine if someone means you well or harm, within an instant, within the blink of an eye, kind of thing. And likewise, when you stare at a baby, obviously it's pure love. It's pure soul to soul love, right? And that amplifies your own polyvagal expression. So it's healing for the chiropractor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's quite literally like, oh my gosh, it's energy filling. It fills your cup, kind of thing. And so my mom was selfishly filling her own cup because she knew that, oh my God, this is, I'm helping babies. That's great. But I'm filling my cup, and that's important too, especially when you're trying to juggle a lot of things. So, now I'm at the point where I mentioned I have an associate, and I said, I am very close to just saying, you take everybody, I'll just take the babies.
Yeah.
And when are you going to increase your hours? No. I'm decreasing my hours. I just want the babies. I selfishly want to fill my cup. So this is the idea with polyvagal from that perspective. And that's kind of a vision that my mom had. If more and more chiropractors can feel comfortable and confident, like in the beginning of practice, I wasn't comfortable adjusting babies, and then I went through the ICPA program and I got, had my own kids. You get more and more comfortable, and you start to like revel in how rewarding that work is. But if more and more chiropractors were doing that kind of work, obviously more kids would be getting adjusted, more families would have access, but more chiropractors would be filling their cup.
Yeah.
And in this time when we're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen in November? Who cares? What's going to happen, around the world, all the different stuff that seems like it's falling apart. None of that matters when you're staring at a baby and they're looking back at you and you're making that correction. And you see it in their eyes when they just say, I don't know how you found that, but thank you for finding that, and it's just like, oh, so that's like, that's the premise. That's the kind of the mission that the ICPA is kind of still embarked on, is like, how do we get more chiropractors doing this work? It's just so rewarding in that sense. So yeah, polyvagal's a fascinating topic, and we could go further into it.
Well,
and
do me a favor.
Go ahead.
Share for the people who've heard the term, it's a buzzy word right now, right? In a minute and whatever, 60 seconds, give or take, how would you define it for a chiropractor?
Well, I think the old model is to say sympathetic versus parasympathetic. And sympathetic dominance is not good. So we need to be parasympathetic, and we're doing the adjustment, and that's reducing stress. And oh, thank God, it's bringing us more towards parasympathetic. But parasympathetic, there's really two sides of parasympathetic, you know, and there's that kind of social engagement, that relaxed. And so Porges, and this was back in the early 90s, you know, really kind of uncovered this. And he's saying, no, there's this kind of rudimentary pre-mammalian, you know, vagal origin pathway. And that goes to kind of the almost the shutdown, the protection, you know, parasympathetic response. And you can imagine like a lizard that would work really well for, you know, like I'm under threat, just freeze. And they're cold blooded, so they don't need, and they can actually survive by, you know, feigning death like that. Whereas if we are firing that, now we're in parasympathetic, it's good, right? No. Too much parasympathetic is not good. And this is what he kind of, you know, this was some of the feedback when he published his paper called The Vagal Paradox, you know, talking about this kind of dichotomy, high vagal tone in some regards. And back then it wasn't called heart rate variability. It was called respiratory sinus arrhythmia. But higher vagal tone was incredibly protective for infants, especially preemies. But neonatologists were also told that too much vagal activity, but that was the other vagal branch. That was the parasympathetic, you know, shut down, feigning death, lizard branch, you know, the dorsal vagal branch. The ventral vagus is this social engagement. That's the staring into each other in the eyes. That's that communion that you achieve when you actually gather. And so this really blew up for a lot of people over the past few years when we were so isolated and we weren't getting that connection, you know? So I think that's what really brought it to the surface. Say, oh my gosh, we can't let this happen again. You know, humans are meant to be communal, you know, in community with each other. So that might've been more than a minute and a half.
But. Wow. It's great. It's great because, you know, and I think for our viewers to know this, I mean, you know, if you haven't had a baby or you haven't, whether parentally or whether, in practice, if you've been married, you know, and you did your vows or you looked at your spouse eye to eye, you know, at that moment, you know, and whether you're in front of people or you're just at that moment is the moment that you're talking about, that just that connection that's there, right? And poof, it's like I'm only seeing one thing ahead of me. This is the person that's with me. And it's a really cool state to be in. And I love that way that you talk about it. Before, you used to call it the respiratory thing. And now it's heart rate variability, because that's another thing that we're looking at, right? Obviously, you know, yes. And whether we know it or not, we're constantly tracking through the polyvagal, right? It just depends if you have, you know, if you're on that dominant parasympathetic where it's too low, right? We'll call it the lizard brain if we want to, right? Or if you're moving into the other side and having that balance. But it's so cool because they get kids balanced like that.
And it's so needed now. I was just, I just saw a Facebook post actually from a high school teacher of mine. He posted a video, literally, I mean, I knew some of the kids in this video. So this was a video of high school in the late 90s. And he's like, look at teenagers before phones. And it was wild. It's wild, Ron. And I mean, what's that?
These were just pictures of them?
It was a video, you know, a compilation, walking around, you know, the high school, showing kids in the classroom, showing kids, in the lunchroom and whatever. Yeah. And they're talking to each other.
Yeah.
They're literally interacting. They're looking each other in the eye. They're laughing. They see the camera. They're doing silly faces to the camera. This is not happening. This is not happening now. And I'll tell you another story. I just brought my oldest. My oldest now is looking at colleges. So I have a junior in high school. And so we went to a college, and she's like a really accomplished pole vaulter. So we're having a one-on-one meeting with the track and field coach. And it was about an hour of, you know, discussion. And she's looking at Cameron and, you know, asking her questions, asking me questions. What are your expectations? All this kind of stuff. And we walked out of that, and Cameron said, oh my God, that was terrible. Exhausted from the experience. Yeah. And that's what I think is the norm for these kids, because I don't know if you remember, like if you wanted to call up, let's say, your girlfriend in high school, you had to dial it in, you know, her dad might have answered.
Or mom, exactly.
Or mom, you had to be on and you had to be respectable and like, okay, you pick up the phone and go, right? Like yeah. you're ready for that. If you wanted to order food, if you wanted to talk, you know, you had to pick up and place an order. Now they're like, it's all just done here. It's the Snapchat and I'll order.
It's not
food
even talking
and,
anymore. It's all.
It's not
all
even talking.
It's just texting.
I know.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of did this sigh when you were talking about the lunchroom because it's never crossed my mind. Like literally that if we walked into a lunchroom, we're in a high school right now, would everybody be having their phones out? Would they be looking
yes.
at the top?
It's
of
quiet.
The
That's what I've heard. It's quiet. Remember how loud and bustling it was?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I walk into our lunchroom here, you know, our cafe here, and they're usually studying or they tend to be joking because they're just so focused all the time. They need that outlet. But it's just amazing to think about, like, you know, I don't know what age kids have phones. I know what age my kids got phones and we had it planned, you know, that kind of thing. But for all I know, they can be having phones at 10 years of age right now. I don't know. But
sixth grade, that's when it is.
Sixth grade, is that it? Is it sixth
yeah.
grade kind of like the norm of that comes about? So really about 11 years old, you know, 11, 12. And yeah, oh my gosh, Justin, it's a different world, you know. But looking at that and seeing that the interaction isn't there, you know, and you talked about these children, and we were talking about polyvagal, we have yet to even see the effects of the isolation that took place a few years ago and how that is going to play in. And it just makes me say even more, you know, and, you know, everybody should be having their nervous system, you know, their spine checked and their nervous system balanced so that they can adapt at a level, at the best level possible for them, because there's so much underlying interference, whether it's physical, whether it's emotional, whether it's social, that you know, it's incredible what the wave will happen from, you know, from those 2 years on the outlook in 10 years, you know?
Yes. And that's so relevant to the experience of a chiropractic visit. Yeah. When a patient comes in, you know, what do they get? Yes, they get adjusted. Or they, you know, they get assessed and they get adjusted if necessary, right? But what really happens is they see someone who's not hiding behind a clipboard. They see someone who smiles at them, makes eye contact, in a lot of circumstances, gives them a hug. And, you know, then it's tactile and they're being taught, you know, you're feeling that kind of, you know, caring touch. Do you know what I mean? You're talking. Typically, it's in an encouraging way. Your body knows what it's doing. It's like, you don't get this anywhere else. You just don't get this anywhere else. And the importance of that in terms of kind of like turning on their polyvagal, not just from a neurological perspective, like the adjustment can help, you know, activate polyvagal, but from a social, you know, that social engagement. I think it's so much more than the just the technical adjustment. And of course, that's super important. But I think it is that connection, that trust that you build with your patients. That changes the trajectory.
It does. It does. You know, in the 80s, when, you know, we were reading books, we still are, but it was Megatrends was a huge book. The authors escape me right now, but it was, you know, it was Megatrends and it was high tech, high touch. They saw the vision of what was happening with the technology in the world, right? And the more people did technology, the less they would be involved interacting with other people at work, wherever it was, you know, because they'd be stuck in the technology. They had no idea that people would be glued to their phones and that they'd get screen time stuff, you know, that comes from if you got an iPhone, shows you how much you're on Facebook, how much you're on whatever. They have no idea about that. But they said that because people will be more isolated and doing more technology, will be doing more stuff, and they'll be working more technology, high tech equals high touch. That these people need to have that touch. They need to have that interaction. Otherwise, they're just going to be sitting at a desk all day. And that's what we find. You know, that's what we find. I never read it. I read the book three times, but I don't think they ever saw the ramifications of people living a social lifestyle. You know, like this lifestyle of I got 5,000 friends, but I don't know any of them personally, you know. Yeah. And I'm looking for likes and I'm looking for this and all the things that happen. And now it's all coming out, but it's amazing. And it just, like you said, chiropractic offices should be filled up because there's no, there's no other profession that I know of that can more exquisitely work with the nervous system to balance, to touch, and to allow this person on the overall experience of health. And that goes back to that salutogenic lens, right? Talking about creating health here, right?
And you just said it. You said chiropractic offices should be absolutely packed, you know, because this is the service that, that we're delivering. And I would say that if they're not packed, and I'll kind of reference a camcorder, a home video that a chiropractor sent me of Larry Webster back in 1993. This was just, 6 months ago, sent me this DVD. And I'm watching it. And this is like, an uninterrupted hour and a half from Larry Webster. And he talks about, I think he kind of finished up with this. He was talking about like, you want to know the key to success in practice? Because apparently a lot of you guys aren't listening. And he was very blunt, here's the key to success. On Monday morning, you go in and you pick up that first baby and you look that baby in the eyes, right? And you experience the love, the trust, and the energy that you feel from holding that baby, from adjusting that baby, from caring for that baby. And now you take that love, that trust, and energy, and you apply that to every single person who walks in your door. And I defy you to not have the most successful practice if you do that, right? And it's like, it really is. Like, I would say, if you can just be present, be more present, and you just... before you bring the next person back, I'm here with this person right now. This is their one adjustment this month or whatever it is. You know, they're coming in. This is special for them. They drove out of their way to, I'm going to give it to them. You know what I mean? I'm going to be fully present here for them. And I think that is just flooding their polyvagal. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, we're going to wrap. We kind of hit that time, but before I go, I would be remiss not to ask you, tell us a little bit about what's happening with the ICPA. Like, there's always new direction, but where's the focus been, and anything that we can look forward to or our viewers can read about or whatever it is. This isn't a plug for a commercial. I really want to know.
In the research department, we're looking at kind of releasing a consensus paper talking about, infants coming in with feeding dysfunction. So it's a huge reason for mom to kind of seek out chiropractic care. It's maybe the number one reason for moms to come back. You know, if they've been under care during pregnancy, it's like, I'm having trouble with latching. And trying to create consensus amongst the pediatric and perinatal chiropractors in the profession about what that looks like, about how that should be approached, et cetera. And then once that project gets kind of put out there, we want to move on to Webster and really get some much more kind of definitive data on Webster. So that's kind of the next thing on the horizon. But then, kind of to toot our own horn a little bit, we just hit 8,500 members. And we just had our membership meeting, which is our ICPA gathering. And you bring the family together. It's kind of a real kind of family feeling event. And we tend to do that every 2 years or so. And so in 2 years from now, that will be 2026, right? And the ICPA was founded by Larry in 1986. So that'll be the 40-year anniversary. Yeah. And so we're looking forward to that and kind of celebrating, how far we've come and how much farther there is to go, obviously.
Yeah, that's great. And I just kudos for the team you put together. And you've got instructors all over. There's a lot of LifeWest grads that are instructors for the ICPA. And it's just great. And how this organization has developed. If you haven't touched in on the ICPA or even just taken a course or whatever, I mean, we have them at the college here. They use the college. Please, I mean, just check it out and get to it. We'll put the website on the bottom. But Justin, I'm inspired, man. I told you that earlier, and I really am. I am. And it's so nice to see. And, you're pushing 20 years or 18 years in practice, and there's a lot on your plate, but it fell on the right shoulders, and coming from someone who's been around for a little bit more, a few more years than that, I just, you know, it's inspiring to be able to see that, you know, our future is just so bright. It really is. So thank you, my man. I look forward to seeing you in August if I don't see you sooner. And to our viewers, thank you. You know, thanks for coming in. You know, these LifeWest Leadership Lines, we drop them every other week. The opposite weeks is our Life by LifeWest, where Dr. Mary, my wife, and myself host a show with grads who are usually from new grads up to about 15 years. And they got pearls of wisdom, man. I mean, these guys and gals, they're thinking in a whole different direction. I'm going to call you a tweener, you know, Justin. You're kind of like between that like major like Instagram world and all these other things, you know, but you know, I just want to thank our audience. You know, what Dr. Justin talked about today, when we talked about salutogenesis and we talked about the polyvagal, I mean, you know, there are people out there who really need to hear this. So I appreciate that you will send this, you know, to people, because every week I get people calling, writing me saying, oh my God, I just got this from so-and-so, and how do I, you know, get on the list to have this sent to me, you know, every week kind of thing. And so, yeah, it's just good things. And let's keep spreading. Let's keep looking each other in the eye, and let's keep loving each other. And let's keep, you know, keeping ourselves in a coherent state so that we can go out and do the work we're supposed to do and be the change that we're supposed to be. Because I got to tell you, from everything we talked about, Justin, there, you know, and you hear this a lot, but, you know, there really is no better time, you know, to take chiropractic out and to be a chiropractor, because so many people are looking for what we have and don't know it. So share that with them, right? And once again, thank you. Please remember, we all are much more powerful than we were ever led to believe. And we've got a big job and a wonderful job to do. Just keep doing it with grace in your life, love in your heart. And until next time, for Dr. Justin Ulm and myself, we'll bid you adieu, and I'll see you at the next Leadership Line. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today, and for the love, commitment, and passion you emanate every day.
Together, we know we will make this world a better place.